Welcome to Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a serialized novel by Samuel Ligon, published for the first time in The Inlander and broadcast by Spokane Public Radio. Miller Kane is made possible by Sprint and The Inlander. Previously on Miller Kane, Miller is driving toward Washington State when he receives a garbled call from the Skagit County Jail. It's Lizzie. She's in trouble for shooting her estranged husband, Connor, who apparently escaped with minimal injuries. Lizzie asks Miller to pick up Carlene, her 8-year-old daughter, and keep her safe while Lizzie sorts out her legal mess. Miller plans to call Campbell, Lizzie's lawyer, for more details. Now here's author Samuel Ligon.
Chapter 1, Part 4. Miller called the lawyer, sketched out what little he knew of Lizzie's story. Campbell told him there'd be multiple factors in determining how long she'd be locked up. So much would depend on what the witness across the street saw. Campbell said he'd see Lizzie in the morning, and if she had a message for Miller, he'd call. He knew how bad the jail's phones were, part of the punishment, he said, before conviction. Miller transferred Campbell his fee, $35,000, all of which he'd keep, whether the job took a week or 75 years. It would certainly be more than a week, Campbell said, and hopefully less than a year. The timing was vague, which was fine, except that Miller wasn't about to take an 8-year-old out on the massacre circuit, which meant money might become an issue, which meant bail would have to wait, at least for a while. Carlene had means of her own now, true, but Miller wasn't sure how that worked exactly. And it's not like he was close to broke. He had plenty, enough to carry his mom and him and Carlene for at least 6 months. Would Lizzie be out by then? Probably, maybe. She was a nice lady, and Connor was an idiot. Everyone, even the pinched-faced prosecutor, would realize soon enough that he'd deserve to be shot. Miller wondered where Connor was, where Carlene was, right this second. No one was better suited than he was to care for her while her mom was away, to teach her and take care of her and hide her. Not that he'd ever raised a child, or wanted to particularly, but he did love her. That was the thing, and she loved him. Lizzie had told him the idiot wasn't hurt bad, but did that mean he was on the loose, looking for Carlene? Or was he in the hospital, or jail, or dead of a heart attack, or a car accident, or from forgetting how to feed himself? Miller had never met him, but he knew the story. How Connor had left when Carlene was one, sending postcards and presents occasionally, but only showing his face once when he was back in the Bay Area to visit his grandfather. Lizzie had been blindsided by his leaving. He was supposed to be going to Morocco for a week with his buddy Dominic, that's what he told her, to embark on some ridiculous Paul Bowles hash pilgrimage. But he called from Athens 6 days in, extending the trip, and then from Rome a week after that. "What are you doing?" Lizzie asked when he called from Malaga almost a month later. "They had a kid, for Christ's sake." "I'll send money," he said. "Money?" "I'm figuring some stuff out," he said. "What kind of stuff?" "No," he said, "it's good." "What about your job?" she said. The company he worked for was dying, she knew. A dot-com pet grooming service she wasn't entirely clear on. But still, people needed to show up to their jobs, even if they didn't need jobs. "It doesn't matter," Connor said. "This time apart will be good for us. I promise. Just another week or so." She believed him. That's what made her feel stupid later. They had problems, sure, everyone did, but on the whole, they'd been more happy than not. For weeks and weeks, then months and months, she tried to give him space to grow, even though he was 36 and already grown. "He couldn't be tied down anymore," he wrote from Istanbul, "to one idea or belief system, to one person or place. He'd be back," he said, "once he figured himself out." But he didn't come back. And Lizzie's longing turned to hurt and anger and resentment. And after several years, she buried him. What else was she supposed to do? She had Carlene to raise, and she wasn't going to be miserable. And she wasn't going to be a victim, even though Connor was an idiot. They had no custody agreement because they'd never divorced, something she regretted now. Miller had encouraged her over the years to nail down custody, but Lizzie didn't think Connor would ever come home. He was too careless, too immature, too committed to his own pleasure. When she moved from the Bay Area back to Washington, to Mount Vernon, he didn't even notice. Not that she bothered telling him. If he wasn't in Aspen, he was in Provincetown. If he wasn't on Kauai, he was on Grand Cayman. If he wasn't in Vietnam, he was in India, backpacking, mountain climbing, snorkeling, experiencing the world, writing, painting, sculpting, living, sending postcards, and it wasn't his fault if Lizzie wouldn't join him out in the world, which he finally asked her to do years after he left when it was too late. He couldn't be bothered with Carlene until he got cut off by his grandfather a few weeks before the Rosedale massacre. The old man more or less saying he'd be sending Connor's allowance to Carlene from now on. Money Connor viewed as rightfully his since he'd been living off it for 25 years. But it was much worse than losing his allowance. He'd also be cut off from the big pile of money that had been feeding the little piles all these years. It probably never occurred to him that Carlene would jump her spot in line to take his place as the legal heir to the family fortune. It had certainly never occurred to Lizzie. Connor's grandfather died on Memorial Day, triggering Carlene's first allowance installment, which would come once the will was out of probate, $5,000 a month, as explained to Lizzie in a phone call from the old man's attorney. Of course, he wanted to tell you himself, the attorney said. Who did? Lizzie said on the phone. This was the first she'd heard anything about money or an inheritance or anything coming from Connor's family. Mr. Callahan, the attorney said. She hardly even knew the man. Hadn't seen him since they'd left California, though she sent a Christmas card every year with pictures of Carlene. $5,000 a month? Lizzie said. This was before Connor knocked on her door, before she understood that he considered that money his and stolen. That's right, the lawyer said, but that wasn't the half of it. Because when Carlene turned 26, the $5,000 a month would become $50,000 a month. That wasn't possible, was it? And that wasn't all either, because when Carlene turned 35, there'd be more money to manage, a lot more than they could ever imagine, all of it hers. Carlene's. How much more? Lizzie said. She felt this tingling in her chest, in her fingers and toes. They hadn't been poor before, exactly. Lizzie worked as a baker at the co-op in Mount Vernon and made clothes and jewelry she sold to boutiques in Edison, Friday Harbor, Bellingham, with more shops expressing interest all the time. But they sure as hell weren't rich. And now, at 8 years old, Carlene was an heiress? That was the word, right? A female heir to a fortune, an heiress, her, Carlene. And Lizzie would be the mother to an heiress, which made her some kind of duchess or something. A baroness, a baronet, whichever. Somehow, they'd become American royalty. It was hilarious, right? Yes, it was, Miller said when she called him in Cumberland to tell him about it. It was hilarious, she said. And ridiculous, fantastic, money could actually fill you with joy. Lizzie would never have believed that, but it could actually make you giddy, only momentarily maybe, but still, and it was horrible. All that money, more than anyone could ever deserve, all of it stolen in one way or another, tied to all kinds of 19th century exploitation, timber and mining and railroads and God knew what else, slavery for all she knew. No, not that. If it was that, she couldn't. But it was so amazing, these gobs of money coming at her. Well, not her, Carlene. Not that Carlene knew anything about it. And Lizzie planned on keeping it that way. No little girl should know she's an heiress. That could only hurt a child. So walk away, Miller said. What? Lizzie said. Don't take the money, Miller said. And Lizzie said, really? No, Miller said. How else are you supposed to become a duchess? A countess, Lizzie said. But for her, mainly. And Miller said, exactly.
You've been listening to Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a novel by Samuel Ligon, published in weekly installments by The Inlander, with archived audio at SpokanePublicRadio.org/MillerKane. Our theme music is by Indian Goat. I'm your producer, Chris Messini. Join us next week for the latest episode of Miller Kane.